is Teokas Ngostorch, your host for First Voices Indigenous Radio. Join us on WBAI New York, Pacifica Radio, every Thursday at 10 a.m. The energies you will hear are always different, powerful, and not in the habits of entitlement, occupation, and ownership. First Voices Indigenous Radio on WBAI New York, Pacifica Radio, 99.5 FM, every Thursday at 10 to 11 a.m. It is the center of your radio digits, your radio dial, your radio scanner, and all you have to do is lock it in. They say if you repeat something three times, then one will remember it. So, First Voices Indigenous Radio, Thursdays on WPAI New York Pacifica Radio, 99.5 FM. It's a privilege to be here.
Damn straight, and you're listening to WBAI in New York. The time is 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Voltaire.
Hey there.
Dot Rith.
Hey, hello.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Jim.
Hi.
Not Kevin.
Hey, hello.
Mike.
Hi.
And down in Philadelphia, Bernie S. Bernie, you sound very low phone line there. You want to speak up a little?
How about now?
No, you sound distorted. You sound awful.
Well, it must be Sprint. I mean, you can call me back. A bad connection. I'm sorry.
Well, Sprint is a bad connection, I'm afraid, and we've learned that over the years. Well, you're just going to have to pipe up a bit. And Red Hack joins us from the outdoors.
Hello.
Greetings. Well, we're here this week, and happy to say the fundraiser is over, and I want to thank all the listeners for all their help. Yes, 4 weeks we did very well for different shows, and hopefully we won't have to do this again until May. So thanks, everybody, for pledging, for showing your support to this place and keeping it going. That's what it's all about. Okay, any news anybody wants to report? Anything new going on? I've got plenty here. But
there's a lot.
There's a lot? Okay, why don't you start off then?
The Pirate Bay was on trial this past couple weeks.
The Pirate Bay trial just ended.
Although the verdict doesn't come for another month or so.
That's how trials work.
Yeah,
they end, and then somebody figures out who did what and if anybody did anything, and then... Then the answer comes. Now, okay, so what are they on trial for? They're on trial for basically destroying the entertainment industry or something?
Yes. The claim is that they were assisting in making copyright content available, whatever that means.
Okay.
There was originally an additional claim of assisting copyright infringement, and that was dropped early in the trial. And so there's this remaining claim, and apparently the trial was quite the spectacle.
It lasted 11 days, and today they made their closing arguments.
Not today.
Not today? Was it yesterday?
Yeah, it was one of these days.
Okay. Well, they sent us a story today, so I thought it was today. But, okay. You know, they have a time difference there, so
yeah.
I thought it was just...
I think it was yesterday.
Was it yesterday? Okay. Well, you know what? It's... Where did it take place? It took place in...
Sweden,
Stockholm,
okay. I think.
All right. So basically, there are financial issues. Prosecution, according to this article in The Guardian, appears to have an exaggerated view of how much money the site made. They claim millions. And even more generous view of how much had been lost in the cases presented in evidence, which was also millions. Basically, one of the lawyers to quote Torrent Freak's summary, says, when new technology appears, it can be difficult to see the wood for the trees. He said that just because something may have been used by people for illicit purposes, should that mean that there should be an attack on the infrastructure as a result? It's like taking legal action against car manufacturers for the problems experienced on the roads.
I would argue car manufacturers are a lot more complicit, but we don't need to get into that.
Sounds like you're taking
now.
The side of the entertainment industry against the Pirate Bay people.
No, just of the anti-car.
Well, maybe you'd also like this analogy made by one of the American film companies. To consume films and TV shows through the Pirate Bay is like lying on your back and letting fried sparrows fly into your mouth, regardless of whether or not you're hungry. The sparrows are also piled up around you, so you can consume them whenever you want, requiring no effort on your part.
What does that mean?
That Monique Wadstead said that. She represents the American film companies, and that came from a website called thedailytea.com, so it's not accurate. Blame them. But, Rob?
I can't help but notice that's much more interesting than any film that they've actually put out in the past year.
Absolutely.
Wow. And Emmanuel?
Yes, go ahead, Bernie.
That begs the question, is she referring to African or European fried swallows?
Oh, don't start.
So they haven't been charged with child pornography abetting or helping terrorists or anything like that?
Not yet. Okay. That's coming, I'm sure, but they haven't figured out a way to charge them for that yet. But on that subject, okay, interesting. We've heard this other story that's been coming out of Vermont for the last couple of years. Now, the latest on this, a federal judge in Vermont has upheld a federal grand jury subpoena requiring that a Vermont man give federal investigators the decrypted contents of his laptop computer, saying that to do so would not violate his right against self-incrimination. Now, this came down on February 19th. It's a widely watched case in the involving piracy in the digital age. One of the first to address the government's ability to force travelers to give up encrypted data for law enforcement purposes. Something that I feel very strongly about. Now, in a narrow ruling, U.S. District Judge William K. Sessions III says Sebastian Boucher had waived his right against self-incrimination when he initially cooperated with border agents inspecting his laptop for child pornography on December 17, 2006. He must now comply with the subpoena or face contempt sanction. Now, originally there had been a ruling in support of his right not to give the passcode out, but the interesting thing about this case is that, as I said, it appears that he initially gave them the password, or at least typed the password in front of them. And if you do something like that, can you then claim the Fifth?
I don't think he'd actually given them the password. I think the computer at that point was unlocked, and so when they were looking at it, and then when they shut it off, that's when everything was encrypted again. So at the state that they confiscated or checked the laptop, it was unencrypted.
According to this Washington Post story that came out last year, about a year ago, he was asked whether he typed in a password to unlock the drive so the agents could view it. He said, "I prefer not to answer that one." So I'm not saying as somebody who doesn't want to answer a question necessarily guilty, but you know, if you didn't type in the password, why not say you didn't type in the password? Which they're now saying. They're now saying he didn't do it. But why not say it then? There's something kind of odd about that.
Well, maybe because his lawyer said don't say anything.
Yeah, that's another reason why I can't stand lawyers. But, Bernie, did you have something on this?
Well, he said a couple of other things, which just goes to show when you're being questioned by law enforcement, just don't say anything because it will be twisted and misused against you. Mm-hmm. But he did admit that the laptop was his, and he may have inferred that what was on the laptop was his as well. So that may have prevented him from invoking the Fifth Amendment legally in this challenge. It's still going to be really interesting to see where this goes. And it begs a couple other questions, like what if through all this traumatic case he's been dragged through, he forgets the password just from all the grief and anguish? What happens then? I mean, if you forget it, then are you held in contempt of court and thrown into jail for forgetting the password? I mean, that's interesting.
Now, this hard drive, it's known as Z drive. Now, first of all, maybe we can theorize. Why is it Z drive? Why would someone have a drive called Z? Anyone?
If they're Canadian, it'd be Zed.
Thank you, Mike.
Anytime.
All right. Any more non-know-it-all answers? Yes. Well, I mean, does it indicate a particular type of setup going on?
No, I think it just indicates that the encrypted drive using whatever software, I think it was PGP.
PGP, yeah.
Just mounted under that arbitrary volume. One would assume that he wouldn't have enough actual volumes to get up to Z, so that's a pretty safe place to put it.
It's not a RAM drive or something like that. It's probably on the hard drive. Well, I'm not trying to help law enforcement here. I'm just kind of curious as to how it's all set up.
Well, no, it's just whatever PGP decided to make as the mount point for that drive. I'm sure it's settable by the user.
Uh-huh. Okay, so basically it was set up that way, and they don't have the ability to simply crack the password, apparently. PGP has not been compromised. Yes, Bernie?
I actually contacted this defendant's lawyer. He hasn't gotten back to me yet, but I asked him a couple of questions and asked him if he'd like to even talk about this on the show, but the response yet. But one of the questions I asked him was, one, what happens if you forget your password? Two, just on the tip of my tongue, what did you just say before I chimed in?
Have I got the transcript, court reporter? We're talking about how PGP was not cracked.
Yeah. The other question is, did he think, as the defense lawyer, if he thought that FBI or NSA had the ability to crack PGP keys and just were not showing their hand, because then that would cause people to use other tools to encrypt stuff? Because that raises an interesting question. We don't know for sure whether they're actually looking at stuff or they're just not admitting to it or not. So that's one of the things I would like to know the answer to.
Well, I believe if the NSA had the ability to break public key encryption, they probably wouldn't care to use it for something like this. They'd probably want to use it on more serious situations. So I don't think that the prosecution has access to the hard drive and just doesn't want to come out saying it because the NSA told them not to. I think the NSA, if they did have this ability, would probably just stay clear of this case.
I agree.
All right. We'll certainly be following that. Again, the case has been going on since, 2006 when this started? To sum up, the guy was crossing the border from Canada into the United States, and I don't know why anybody would type their password in to show the customs people if that's in fact what he did. Basically, if you have your computer on, turn your computer off before you go across any border, and don't let anybody into your secret files or your private life. Now, supposedly he did this, and they saw something untoward on there. I think it was animated porn or something like that, and now they'd really like to see it again, except he's not letting them
but
in.
But now can't border agents confiscate your laptop if you refuse to unencrypt it?
Well, that's supposedly what they can do, but... That's again. I'm sure that's open to many legal challenges. I mean, think about what you're giving them. If you type in a password, they can read all of your innermost thoughts, assuming that's what you type into your laptop, all your financial information, trade secrets, God knows what else. They can copy all kinds of sensitive information, and they don't have that right unless there's some compelling evidence to suggest that you're up to something, that you're part of some investigation. But just crossing the border.
And if you are up to something, it's probably best just to let them take the laptop then, as long as you don't think they can get into it if you've secured it well.
Have any laptops been confiscated by people who refuse to give out the passwords? Let's find out if that actually has happened, because I really think this is step... I don't mean right now. He's about to run out the door and look. We can ask people if this has happened to them. But would anybody in this room give their password out or type in, unencrypt their drive to let customs agents or anybody look at your computer?
What I would do is just set up a partition, a small partition, running some random build of Linux with a few convincing-looking icons on it. Not that I would actually use it for anything, but I would boot onto it if someone asked me to.
Well, that's sort of what Kevin Mitnick did a few months ago when he was interrogated. He actually had two computers, and he let them have access, full access to one of them that had nothing on it, and they sort of forgot about the second one. Yeah, it's not very hard to outwit them. The point is, you have to stand up for your rights and say, no, you don't have the right to do this, and not let them think they do. And the more people who refuse, the more the chance of this being challenged successfully. Okay, let's look at something going on in a different part of the world. This actually just came out today. I thought this was pretty interesting. Apparently, the Finnish parliament has approved controversial legislation Wednesday that allows employers to track workers' emails. Now, this is a fascinating story for a couple of reasons. The vote was 96 to 56. 48 were absent or abstained. Now, this new law, which is subject to the president's approval, and supposedly we'll get it, does not allow employers to read employees' emails, but it gives them the right to track workers' emails by retaining information about such messages, including the recipients, senders, and the time when emails have been sent or received. And it also allows them to see if emails contain attachments. If employers suspect a crime, they have to call in police to investigate. Prime Minister Mari Vanhan, how do you say this, Red Hack? You don't know who the Prime Minister is of Finland? Mari Vanhanen. Well, whoever that is.
Matti Vanhanen, it's a guy.
Say that one more time.
Matti Vanhanen.
Thank you. We must not be naive and imagine that corporate espionage does not happen here in Finland. We must find ways of making that as difficult as possible. They call this law Lex Nokia. That's Nokia's law, or Nokia's law. After news reports that the world's largest mobile phone maker had threatened to move its headquarters out of Finland if the legislation was not approved. Of course, they've denied that. Now, what I find interesting about this is that in this country, this kind of thing is nothing compared to what employers can do to their employees. They certainly do read email. They monitor traffic. And here it's a big deal just to implement something like this that says, well, you emailed this person, and why did you email somebody at a competing company? And here we take it for granted.
I think there's a lot more economic espionage that takes place in Europe, though, than does here. I remember a couple years ago when we were discussing the crypto phone, the whole reason, or one of the reasons anyway, that they were developing that was because of this whole economic espionage thing where you actually were in the risk of your CEO being overheard by somebody from another company. So I think it's a lot more serious in Europe than it is here. But at the same time, I don't even think we have regular. I mean, what would prevent employers here from doing that if you're using their email system?
Well, they do that, and they say they have the right to do that. That email that you use from their computers belongs to them, actually.
So the fact that they had a better starting point, I suppose, in Europe that they didn't have, that companies weren't doing this is one thing. But now, you know, now they're
playing catch
the reins.
Up. They're playing catch up.
In fact, in the United States, your employer, assuming you're using your employer's email system, your employer has the right to actually read the content of your email.
Yeah, that's
whereas
what I'm saying.
Under this Finnish proposal, all they can read is the headers.
Yes.
If I were going to sell out my company, why would I use my work email?
Because you're stupid. I mean, no, because people do the dumbest things from work, and I think we all know this. They Twitter, they go on Facebook, they say all kinds of horrible things, and they you know, reveal corporate secrets and put their name on it. I mean, people do really dumb things. And yes, why would you use your company's computer to do something like that? People store pornography on their company computers, and then they're surprised when it gets found out. You know, teachers store pornography on the school's priests. Yeah, you name it. People do stupid things.
They store pornography on the priests?
But you, yeah. Yeah, that's what I meant. They, you know, people with their laptops, too, as we just reported, they are at risk as well if they don't take precautions. So, yeah, think about what you're doing when you're using a computer. Makes perfect sense. Okay, now guess what it's time for. Yes, it's the return of one of our favorite features, one of our beloved features, one of the features that, in fact, petitions have been launched to save. We're talking about .gov of the week. Yes, people are breaking into spontaneous cheers even as we speak outside in the streets and throughout the country and world. And to celebrate this occasion, and really the only reason why we didn't have it on was because we had a fundraiser and we had all kinds of other things to deal with the last few weeks. But we have a whole backload of potential .gov sites. This particular one, this is one of my favorites. This is www.barney.gov. Barney.gov. Does anybody know who Barney is?
Is it the purple dinosaur?
No, he's not the purple dinosaur, Bernie. No.
Good.
Mike? Why would he have a .gov domain?
Well, I'm sure there's some other equally ridiculous .gov
domain. I mean, that would be so scary if that Barney was somehow part of the government.
We've actually discussed this very Barney on this very program before. Barney is a symbol of imperialist decadence, I believe we reported.
Well, I think you said that. That was your theory.
Well,
what's that, Barney?
Wasn't he alleged by some right-wing group as being a gay dinosaur to be his purple?
You know what? You're going to have to drop the purple dinosaur thing because it's got nothing to do with him. We're talking about Barney, the former president of the United States, Scottish Terrier, President George W. Bush's Scottish Terrier, born on September 30th, 2000. He has his own damn web page. Can you believe this? Pictures and all sorts of facts. Here's a question. Morgan from England writes, "Dear Mr. Barney, I was wondering if you could help me with my maths homework, plural. Okay, how about your English's homework as well? What is 7x7? And Barney First Dog says 49. You know, that's not even funny. They had no sense of humor back then. They just answered the question. How could a dog get that right in the first place?
Wait, the dog is addressed as Mr. Barney?
Well, that person did, but he also said Matt, plural, so who knows?
Well, that's what they do over there.
Now, he was born September 30th, 2000 in New Jersey. His address, well, the address when this was written was 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C. Owners, President George W. Bush and First Lady Laura Bush. Mother was named, does anybody know this? This is a great trivia question. His mother was named Coors. Yes, like the beer. A Scottish Terrier owned by former Environmental Protection Agency Director Christine Todd Whitman. In fact, also the governor of New Jersey, which they should have mentioned. Maybe that's why the dog was born in New Jersey. Yeah. The father was Kelly of Champion Motherwell Storm Warning. And just to quickly summarize what Barney is. Barney is a much-loved First Family member. Barney loves to play with his soccer ball, his golf ball, and most recently, is it safe to give a golf ball to a dog? Can't they swallow that? Whatever.
It's a small dog.
Yeah, that's true. It's a small dog. Most recently has become a fan of playing horseshoes. Okay, that's dangerous for a dog. Horseshoes are made of iron. They could really hurt you.
Maybe they're plastic horseshoes.
Well, yeah, knowing the Bush administration, they probably were plastic. There are numerous websites across the internet devoted to Barney. Yeah, but this is the most stupid and wasteful. .gov. Barney gets a .gov. We can't get a .gov. He has also starred in several films, and for some reason they put that in quotes, available on the White House website. Oh, because they're not really films. In fact, let's listen to a little bit of one of those films, because I think this is just priceless. And you'll even hear the former president making an appearance, because this is what he did with his time, make films about his dog while sitting in the White House. But you'll hear the acting is really something not to be missed. And this is a... this is a, of course, now it's not working. I tested this out before and it was working fine. Here we go. There's a graphic of the dog running past the White House. It's a red, white, and blue Christmas from Barney Productions. And here we're approaching the White House. We're still approaching the White House. Film is cheap.
It's really great to have the whole family together like this.
It really is special. In fact, Willard, I think these are the memories we're going to cherish most about our time in the White House.
Well, that, Willard, and when Barney decorates the whole house for the holidays.
Barney, what do you have in store this year?
I don't know what that means. When a dog decorates an entire house for the holidays, it's not going
to
be good.
A great way to spend our last holiday here in the White House.
A real red, white, and blue holiday.
How very patriotic.
It seems like you'll be busy, Barney. You better get started.
A fast motion of decorating a Christmas tree, and Barney's doing absolutely nothing. Oh, now Barney's sleeping. And now he's dreaming, apparently.
And as we return to the Summer Olympic Games, it's all up to this final vault by Barney. And he sticks the landing! Barney and Miss Beasley with their second synchronized dive. And it's a flawless performance! And of course, in lane four, it's the heavy favorite, Barney. And as they come down to the wire, it's Barney closing! And it's Barney by a paw! All right, so back here at the 18th hole, it all comes down to this. Barney, with one putt, not only to win the hole, but to secure the Ryder Cup for the American. Does it have enough? Does it have enough? Yes! The United States wins the Ryder Cup!
Barney, you better wake up, fella. There's a lot of work to do around here. We're sprinting to the finish, not napping to the finish.
Well, not sure how true that is, actually. This gives you an idea.
How many of my taxpayer dollars went to making that?
I don't know. That's only one film. And it's really pretty incredible what's going on here. George W. Bush did an amazing performance, I thought. He's a good actor.
I mean, compared to the rest of the money the Bush White House spent money on, you know, this is just fine with me.
If they had stuck to this, yeah, and not done other things. But let's move away from the politics and invite people to visit www.barney.gov, and then you can see the .gov site of the week. If you have a suggestion for .gov of the week, email us, oth@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. There is something like, how many .gov websites, Bernie?
There are 4,657 .gov domain names as of January 2009.
All right, so we have well over 4,000 of those left to go, so we intend to get through some of the most interesting ones. Again, OTH at 2600.com. Write to us.
I'm just wondering.
Yeah.
Not too long ago, we were talking about how Obama's change.gov was granted .gov status. How did Barney get a .gov?
Yeah, exactly. We're going to complain about that. I think this, what do you think, Barney? Is this legal?
It's hard to see how this could be considered a partisan political website because dogs can't register to vote.
Yeah, but that dog was pretty pretty loyal to one side only, I think.
You know, Barney is not only in films. There's many films at Barney.gov with Barney in them, but there's some other films I found online with Barney in them, including one of him viciously biting the hand of a White House reporter.
Yeah, but that's not on that website.
No, but you can find that online pretty easily. Uh-huh. He's really vicious, this doggy.
I suppose so.
Why does Barney still have a .gov? I mean, he's not part of the First Family anymore.
No, that's true, and it forwards.
Shouldn't he be retired or something?
It forwards. It forwards to George W. Bush-WhiteHouse.archives.gov now, /Barney. So I guess you can find all kinds of interesting things over there on that site. That's neither here nor there. Now let's move on to some more frivolous items in the news, such as this. Now, this is kind of interesting. This was reported on NPR, but police in Tibet are sweeping markets looking for banned music. That's right. Chinese state media report that police have arrested several suspects for allegedly downloading, not just downloading music, but downloading to their cell phones ringtones that the government considers reactionary. Yeah. So if your phone rings with a particular banned bit of music, you could be in a lot of trouble. Now, some songs of dead giveaways are usually sung by Tibetan exiles who aren't afraid to sing their god king's name loud and proud, such as one entitled Dalai Lama. But basically, you have to wonder, what's the most offensive thing we could possibly download to our cell phones to get reactions, to get maybe prosecuted for having something illegal on our cell phones? Any ideas?
How about some show tunes from Hello, Dolly?
I don't know. Do you have to pay for that? I mean, it's something you pay for the ringtone already. But are there things that simply are not allowed on ringtones? I'd like to know. Mike, you're taking your phone out. Do you have something?
No, but I'm remembering I didn't put it on silent before.
Ah, okay, good. I guess this is kind of inevitable. I mean, if you were maybe in the 1950s, you had a cell phone. Well, of course, you'd be the object of attention for other reasons. But let's say you played like Internationale or something on your communist anthem on your cell phone. That would be maybe cause for being suspicious of something.
The sound of child pornography.
The sound. Oh. Must that be brought into every single conversation? But yeah, I suppose that probably. Well, I guess something obscene probably would. What are the rules about that? Maybe a barrage of obscenities coming from your cell phone every time it rang. What crime would you be charged with exactly?
I think it's legal,
and I'm pretty sure those exist.
Okay, but Barney, what?
I know. How about some red box or blue box tones? They have to be considered illegal to have as a ringtone.
About 10 years too late, but yeah.
True, but the law hasn't changed.
Uh-huh. All right.
What about a clip of someone yelling fire over and over real loud?
Well, if you're in a crowded theater doing that, I think you're just going to get beaten up for having the cell phone ringing, let alone what it's saying. But, yeah. Okay, here are some other really interesting things going on out there, maybe frivolous things. An Oceanside, Long Island teenager is suing four former high school classmates, their parents, and Facebook for $3 million for allegedly bullying her in a private forum on the social networking site. Denise Finkel, now a student at the University of Albany, filed a lawsuit in state Supreme Court in Manhattan accusing the former classmates of creating a password-protected Facebook group, quote, calculated to hold the plaintiff up to public hatred, ridicule, and disgrace, unquote. And if they didn't do that before, after the lawsuit, I'm sure they're doing it. The defendants, Michael Dauber, Jeffrey Schwartz, Leah Hertz, and Melinda Danowitz, are, like Finkel, 2008 graduates of Oceanside High School. The suit claims they asserted that Finkel, among other things, participated in bestiality and contracted AIDS. Excerpts of the Facebook group from 2007 attached as an exhibit to the lawsuit did not identify Finkel by name, but her attorney, Mark Altschul of Manhattan, said the derogatory statements referred to her. Yeah, she had a very difficult time in high school, he said. They were making sure that she was an unwanted soul there. But, you know, it's interesting. And, of course, Facebook says we see no merit in this suit and we will fight it vigorously. But someone's not even named, and yet they, if they think they're being referred to, even if they are named.
Her feelings were hurt, and she can afford lawyers. Welcome to America.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think, Mike?
I think that if someone were saying things about me that I did not want known, was not comfortable with, the last thing I would do was have articles written about them in the New York Times.
Yeah, that's probably one way to avoid that. But what is the proper? I mean, we're talking about an era of cyberbullying, you know, where people kill themselves because of what somebody texts them or says about them on MySpace. So how seriously are we supposed to take these things now when people get bullied online? Is there any kind of recourse?
There may be recourse that can be taken within the school or with the individuals involved, but it's...
They're not in school anymore. They graduated.
Well, then who cares?
I don't know. Apparently the online community
I can see caring when you have to interact with these people, when you have to see these people on a daily basis and you know what they're saying about you online.
Yeah, and she didn't have to see them because she graduated, so there's no reason
now,
to see them.
I don't get it.
Yeah. Barney, did you have something?
Well, obviously this is not something that should be litigated or wasting court's time with. Just people have to deal with things like adults sometimes, and just and that's all I have to say.
Yeah, yeah. And the online world is just, it's made up of a lot of idiots and morons. Just look at any forum anywhere, except for ours, of course. But, you know, on newspapers, people just say the stupidest things just to get attention. And if you give them the attention, they love it. They love it more than anything. And that's what's happening here.
One thing I love about the internet more than anything is the ability to say whatever I like about whatever. So if someone wants to do the same and I'm the target of it, what complaint could I possibly have?
What if they're dropping you docs and giving out all kinds of private personal information that you don't want given out? What if they're taking pictures of your house and stalking you and doing all sorts of things that make you uncomfortable? Do you have any recourse then, or do you just ignore that?
If they took pictures of my house legally from public property, I'm not gonna raise any stink about it.
You can get it blurred on Google.
I could get it blurred on Google.
Yeah, Dick Cheney did that.
All I can say is I'm not gonna go home and preemptively register Rob T. Firefly engages in bestiality and contractedaids.com or something.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, this is only the beginning. We're going to see so many things like this in the future. People just bringing it to the courts and all kinds of nonsense being put online. Okay, here's something else, which I think it goes along the same basic theme. And this comes out of one of our favorite persons' offices, Congressman Pete King of Long Island. Apparently, he's involved in what is known as the proposed Camera Phone Predator Alert Act. Yeah, I kid you not. One click is all it takes to be violated by a camera phone predator. Unfortunately, this new brand of criminal has emerged with the maturation of technology. These free-clicking individuals often use the digital cameras in their mobile phones to secretly take photographs under children's skirts and usually target their often female prey in shopping mall changing rooms. You look kind of befuddled there, Ron. Like you've never heard of anything like this before in your life, but I can assure you this is going on even as we speak. The photographs taken without the subject's knowledge or consent are often transmitted over the Internet. Yes, the Internet, that I word, are sometimes used in collections of illicit photographs of minors. Chelsea Ahern Fikita, 16 years old, is one person who is fighting back against these predators and for some reason has agreed to have her name used. The 11th grade student at Ward Melville High School, which, by the way, is my old alma mater in Easetalket, New York, came up with the principal points of the Federal Camera Phone Predator Alert Act, otherwise known as the CPPAA, which spells absolutely nothing. The bill first introduced on September 6, 2007, by U.S. Representative Peter King, Republican of Seaford, intends to make it mandatory, and this will solve everything, that whenever a photograph is taken by a mobile phone, that phone must emit an audible tone, one that cannot be disabled, in hopes of warning potential victims and deterring potential camera phone predators. Because a bill like this can take up to 3 years to get signed into law, Ms. Ahern Fikita was getting antsy. She met last May 27th with Representative King to get an update and says she was encouraged. It was an honor meeting Congressman King. He explained how federal bills become laws and really encouraged me to continue to stay involved. He even joked and told me not to run against him someday. And it goes on like that. Voltaire, you had something on this?
No, I was just going to say that I don't think this bill is going to go anywhere. It's kind of like the bill that's in New York State that's supposed to ban using headphones when you're crossing the street.
Uh-huh.
Like you said, it was back in 2007. I think the general consensus is that this bill isn't going anywhere.
Stop it.
It's also outrageous because they could simply break the speaker on their camera phone.
Oh, yeah, then it's illegal, though. Yeah, I mean, it is.
Yes.
I was going to say that she clearly didn't watch enough Schoolhouse Rock as a kid because there's a really catchy tune about how a bill becomes a law, and she should really watch it.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I've seen that. Doesn't that predate Schoolhouse Rock? It comes from a long time ago. Rob?
If I had a daughter, I would like to think I would notice if somebody had a camera under her skirt in a public place.
Yeah, you know, there's that, too. You know, it's basically the slithering under the changing room door with the device. That's something that should get your attention, too. And what about deaf kids? Who's going to protect them? All right, how do we alert them that these camera phone predators are out there, but that we have to protect them as well? There's a little bit more of this story, which is kind of interesting. After overhearing her mother being interviewed by a television reporter about a camera phone incident involving teenage girls in the dressing room at the Smith Haven Mall in Lake Grove, again, my alma mater for malls, that's my local mall, Ahern Fakif had decided to take a stand. She was outraged after seeing that report. She felt it was unfair that a picture could be taken without someone knowing, and she wanted to do something about it. It was U.S. Senator Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, who recommended that Ahern Fakif contact King. That's kind of nasty of him. But, yes, he passed it on to him. Together, King and Ahern Fakif decided to combat this issue. Child predators are becoming more diabolical in their ways to prey on children, and we must stay one step ahead of them in order to keep our community safe, says King. I introduced the Camera Phone Predator Alert Act so that parents and children can be alerted when these criminals try to exploit our children in public places. Private is okay, but public... Yeah, the bill has been referred to the House of Representatives Subcommittee on Commerce, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and once the laughter dies down, it will be reviewed. If the committee decides to review and vote on it, the bill will go to a House floor for a vote. If passed, the bill will move to the Senate. The final step, of course, is the signature of the president. And if all those steps are completed, the Camera Phone Predator Alert Act will become law. Every mobile phone manufactured for sale in the United States that has a camera feature will be required to have an audible alert. And that law will take effect 1 year after the bill is passed. I don't know about the old phones. What
happens then children will be safe.
Yeah, then the children will be safe. Then we can finally relax.
What about cameras that aren't phones?
You know, no one's thought about that. We're only concerned about phones, but we didn't think about actual real cameras.
I say we have them banned.
And what about portrait artists that paint pictures as they're peering underneath these dressing rooms? There's all kinds of threats out there.
I wish it wasn't so hard for these kids to get into college these days. Apparently, you need to have a law on your application also. That, you know, I got this signed into law a couple years ago.
Well, she's learning a lot about the political process and how stupid it is.
She should just watch that Schoolhouse Rock video.
Yeah, I think that might. Oh, boy. Yes, Bernie, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that when cell phones with cameras are outlawed, only... Well, you can finish the rest of
it. I knew somebody was going to say that. I just knew it.
I'm right now posting a photograph I took while you were reading that story to the internet from my camera phone.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike, because you're tied into this this world here. Oh, boy. Now, here's something else, though. Here's something that Verizon is doing to help the situation. And, yes, there is a situation here. They have a wireless plan known as wireless parenting. And basically what you can do if you're a wireless parent you can control your children by giving their cell phone a curfew. That's right. You can restrict messaging and data access to specific times and days so your child can enjoy access on a schedule that you both agree on. Let's face it, they don't have to agree. Only you have to agree. And you can just impose this at will. You can force your child to only be able to send text messages between 2 and 3 in the morning. Yeah, and people will do things like that just to torment their children. And who's going to protect them? Yeah.
Can you track them yet or see if they're speeding in their car?
Of course you can track them. That's old. They've been having those GPS devices and where's Junior? Why is he crossing the state line now? And things like that. All sorts of things like that. You can set up and monitor specific monthly allowances on voice calls and messaging for each member of your family. Keep track of who your child is talking to. Set up select numbers that can always contact your child's device, regardless of restrictions or allowances. Block undesirable contacts from both incoming and outgoing calls and messages. Free content filtering lets you manage what content your child can access from their wireless device.
I like that because prior to this, I don't think you could block numbers to your phone, your normal phone. So now that they have this technology,
yeah.
I want a number block. I should be able to call them.
I assume you don't have to prove you're a child. So, yeah,
right.
Sign up for usage controls. Go to VerizonWireless.com/usage controls. Of course, the one condition is you have to be a Verizon Wireless customer.
Oh, darn.
Oh, yes. Okay, what do you got, Mike?
I have this story from Germany. A German court, the highest German court in Karlsruhe, Germany, has ruled that electronic voting machines are illegal in Germany now.
Okay, that's good news,
yeah,
right?
It's good news.
So that our friends at the CCC have been doing there.
You can go on the CCC website, ccc.de. They have a very long story about it. Unfortunately, it's all in German. But this little story from the AP says, you know, the judge says there's a provision in the law requiring that voters be able to assure themselves without specific technical knowledge that their vote was recorded correctly. And apparently that's the law in Germany. It's a radical concept in the United States.
We'll get there. We'll get there at some point. We still have our good old-fashioned mechanical machines here in New York. Okay, we've taken phone calls, by the way, because we haven't done that in a while. So our phone number is 212-209-2900. Welcome any calls from people that we have not heard from in a while. We've talked in recent weeks about, of course, you know, protecting the children and better ways of doing that. And one of the ways that, of course, cops and investigators protect the children is by impersonating children online and luring in evil people and then arresting them for talking to them as if they were children that they were trying to lure someplace else.
You can see
else.
This on TV.
You can see, yeah, what shows do that?
Is
Dateline or something?
I think To Catch a Predator, yeah.
It's a whole big series about this. But it's gone the other way now, and I welcome this. Instead of a cop impersonating a 14-year-old, a 14-year-old has impersonated a cop. This happened in Chicago. A teenager impersonating a Chicago police officer played a minor role in an arrest on January 24th. Not his own. Eventually that one happened as well. But according to Police Superintendent Jody Weiss, on a Tuesday of that week, Superintendent Weiss called on the U.S. Secret Service for a review of the security breach, which he called outrageous, angering, disturbing, and unforgettable. In my mind, it's almost incomprehensible, add that to the list, that it could have happened. Unfortunately, it did. It's very disturbing, and that's why we want to send a message that this can't happen again. Basically, the 14-year-old boy, who is a former police cadet, I didn't know you could be a police cadet at 14, I guess you can, an apparent aspiring police officer entered the back door at the Grand Crossing District Station on the city's south side on January 24th. He was dressed in regulation clothing, and police say it's not clear where he got the uniform. He had no gun or CPD star, Chicago Police Department, but was issued a radio and was sent out with a traffic officer. He worked an entire 5.5-hour shift. During that time, the subject drove the squad car for approximately 2 hours, interacted with the public while responding to at least 5 assignments, operated a portable data terminal, and participated in the detention of a suspect. The impersonator played a minor role in the arrest of a violation of order of protection. The boy briefly held the suspect's arm behind his back. After the shift, the teenager and the relatively new female officer he was riding with returned to the station, where a supervisor realized the teen was not an officer and had him arrested. How is it so many others missed the fact that the teen was not a cop and unable to legally drive? I don't know. They weren't paying attention. Perhaps maybe they were lax. That's why we did the investigation, said Superintendent Weiss. Those answers we have to hold tight until we go through the adjudication stage. And get this, for that reason, the names of the 7 officers facing discipline and the nature of the recommended sanctions can't be disclosed. That has to be kept secret. And, of course, the kid's name also has to be kept secret because A, he's a minor, and B, he's a cop. So for 2 reasons now, he's doubly protected. So it's unbelievable. But, yes, sometimes it does go the other way.
Emmanuel.
Yes, go ahead, Bernie.
I think maybe the police department there was more embarrassed and had to arrest him just simply because they realized that this 14-year-old kid was more effective than any of their other officers on duty.
Well, maybe. I guess no complaints were issued against the way he carried out his job, except for the fact that he wasn't supposed to be doing that. But, yeah, interesting. Okay, again, 212-209-2900 is our phone number, so please give us a call, and we'd love to hear from you. If your laptop has been stolen, this is something new that's going on, you can now tell those thieves exactly what you think of them. This company known as Front Door Software Corporation Retriever, their program displays your contact information as your computer boots up, which may be not the best thing to do if your computer's been stolen, because they'll come back for more then. There's even space for a plea to a good Samaritan, $50 for my safe return, perhaps, something along those lines. In most cases, that's enough to help an honest person return the machine. Except in most cases, honest people aren't the ones who have stolen the machine. In the darkest scenarios, though, Retriever takes off the kid gloves. Get ready for this. you can log on to a website and check a box indicating the computer is missing. And now during startup, a big yellow and red banner appears on the screen, boldly declaring the laptop lost or stolen. This message is set to reappear every 30 seconds, no matter how many times the thief closes the window. You can remotely switch on a second password prompt if you fear the thief has also stolen your regular Windows, Macintosh, or Linux login. Behind the scenes, Retriever uses built-in Wi-Fi to sniff out nearby networks, then suss out what internet service providers power them, and with that information in hand, basically, they can file a police report and help locate the criminal. And while waiting for law enforcement to come through, you can even let off steam by sending new messages to the nagging stolen computer screen, such as, "You are being tracked, I am right at your door," or basically saying, "You're the Secret Service," or, get this, "The Catholic Church." I'm quite sure why that would make people that afraid. You can say, "Get your hands off me, you SOB," or something along those lines. "If you are not my owner, please report me now. Or report your name," or something like that. It's kind of interesting. Yes, Red Hack.
This seems A, gimmicky, and B, like, once they realize that you're able to track them, they'll probably wipe the hard drive. There's actually free software out there. I think it's called Adiona from Washington University that does the same thing, except without the big bright yellow messages. And when it's the laptop is connected to the internet, it will upload its location to a location that only you have access to because it's encrypted with a key and all that. And also, if you have a built-in camera, such as in a MacBook, it will actually take pictures of the suspect.
That's always good. A lot of Macintoshes have that option turned on. People forget to turn it off, and you can always see what they're doing if they forget to turn it off.
It actually indicates there's a light when the camera's on.
Lights burn out. Lights burn out or
be
broken.
It's a telescreen. Yeah. So there is a free software out there that if you do have this concern that your laptop will be stolen, you can use it to... I can find the name.
Yeah, but most good thieves, well, not good thieves, but, you know, thieves who know what they're doing will, know not to fall for this.
Right, but this is quiet. This is happening, so they turn it on, they plug it in, they might not realize it first.
What if a stalker steals somebody's laptop and uses that contact information at the boot-up screen to find out where
exactly.
Their subject lives?
Yeah, that's why it's not good to necessarily do that.
Because if they're a stalker, then they probably already know.
Well, what if they're trying to find out? They're like, "Hey, I'll just take the
they could be a beginner stalker.
About 5 minutes.
You see somebody in Starbucks with a laptop, you say, "Hey, I'd like to know where that person lives," and they're stupid enough to go to the bathroom, you grab it, you run outside, you open it up, it says who they are, you put it back, and they don't even know.
There's a lot of what-ifs in that.
Yeah, there are a lot of what-ifs. Why would somebody go to Starbucks and use a computer? A couple of announcements to make for upcoming events, and we'll take some phone calls. So we have a full switchboard there. CarolinaCon coming up March 18th and 19th. Is that what a weird font that is? Yes, I believe so. Coming up in Chapel Hill. I'm sorry, March 13th and 14th. Looks like 18th and 19th up there. 13th and 14th in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Go to carolinacon.org. It didn't print the URL on here. Is it carolinacon.org? Yes, that's what it is, carolinacon.org. And not one of the conferences I've ever attended, but I hear good things about it. So if you're in Carolina, go to that. iBeams presenting an alternate world's fair with airborne surveillance balloons, guerrilla media towers, and computerized prayer booths. And that's taking place on Friday and Saturday of this week, March 6th and 7th. Go to www.ibeam.org. That's here in New York City, 540 West 21st Street between 10th and 11th Avenues. And again, ibeam.org has more information on that. They're a lot of fun. Those are the guys that play with laser graffiti and all kinds of throwies and things like that.
I wouldn't recommend going to it this Friday, though, because we have the 2600 meetings.
That's right, 2600 meetings all around the world, first Friday of the month. And, yes, we'll be having it this Friday, so hope to see you there. And finally, the Caltown Computer Congress taking place at Kansas City's Hacker Space. That's for some reason, URLs are not printing out. I'm going to look this up while we take some phone calls. But they're having their grand opening this week, and they have a special membership meeting tomorrow night, Friday, the speaker showcase and late-night LAN party, and Saturday, workshops and after-party. So all kinds of fun things like that. Caltown Computer Congress. If you type that into a search engine, I'm sure you'll find their website, or just keep listening, and we'll announce what their URL is as soon as I track it down. Let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900 is our phone number. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi to everyone. You mentioned earlier about an employer can look at your emails and attachments and all that. Some companies have, or small companies maybe give, maybe one or two or three employees like a cell phone. Can they monitor a cell phone legally, or
well, and I mean, I don't
like
think
if they feel there's some wrongdoing, can they get a private investigator and they can legally monitor that
to tap the actual voice conversation?
Yeah,
because I mean, definitely, if they get the bill, they can see who you've been calling.
Oh no, I'm talking about actually the conversation. Isn't it, don't you need to go to the court for that?
I'm going
to
defer this to Bernie.
You will not be, they will not be able to do that. That would require a law enforcement. If there was criminal activity afoot that they believed and they turned it over to a law enforcement agency, the law enforcement agency could possibly get a wiretapping warrant for that. But no employer is going to be able to hire a private investigator to record your cell phone calls.
Right.
Just, that's not going to happen. But as Red Hack pointed out, they will have a full log of all the calls you sent and received along with the...
I was just trying to figure out the scope of all this. With employers and all of that. I just thought maybe cell phones too.
I mean,
so they can listen. Employers can listen to your phone calls at work. However, in some states, I'm not sure about New York, but in some states, including Pennsylvania, they have to notify whoever you're talking to outside of the company that the call is monitored. But I'm not sure if that's the case in New York.
I mean, okay. You basically have to assume that anything that you do that goes through something that the company controls, whether it's a company phone system or the company's mail servers, is something that they would have access to if they want. And they don't need any kind of legal recourse to get that information.
Yep. All right. Let's take another phone call, 212-209-2900. And by the way, that that website for the Kansas City Hackerspace, Cowtown Computer Congress, well, the website is cowtowncomputercongress.org. And if you go to blog.cowtowncomputercongress.org, you'll hear all kinds of information about that. Okay, 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Good evening. I heard you speaking just now about policemen imitating 14-year-olds and so on. Isn't there a law that they call entrapment?
Well, there is. But apparently it's not considered entrapment the way they're doing it, at least not legally. Bernie, I think you know something about entrapment, Bernie. You have any comment on that?
Well, I was not really a victim of entrapment, in my opinion. But in any case, yeah, there are some people who've gotten off on criminal cases, notably Mark DeLorean, who started and owned the DeLorean Motor Car Company back in the late 70s or early 80s, was entrapped in some big drug ring scam. And the videos that the jury watched made them realize that the law enforcement agency did indeed entrap this guy, and he was not convicted. But apparently, there's been enough case law on these fake children online that are really police officers posing as children, and there's been enough defense attorneys trying to claim entrapment that apparently that defense doesn't work. So don't try that.
Secondly. The gentleman speaking just about a company giving you a cell phone to use. If I'm the company, I'm paying that bill, and they say tapping any line, once one of the parties know about it, it's all right.
Well, if
I'm owning the phone and giving it to you to use, isn't it legal that I can tap it without a law?
It depends on the state. Under federal law, only one party has to know about it. Under individual state laws, I think there's five states across the country. Pennsylvania is one of them. I don't know about the other ones because I'm in Pennsylvania. Both parties have to be made aware that the call is being monitored or recorded.
In New York is one person.
I don't. It probably is. I don't know for sure, though.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I think the question of the caller before was more if two parties are making a phone call, and one of them has a cell phone provided by their company, can the company record what they're saying, as opposed to what the last caller just said, where you're recording a conversation that you're having. So the situation is a little different.
Okay, let's take another phone call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh, dear. Well, you didn't stick around long enough. Let's try this one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a germane question or not, but
It's software related. A lot of these companies give you like free download trials and that sort of thing. And what I'm curious about is usually they say spyware free and that sort of thing. But what I'm curious about is this watermark tendency that they have. Does that inhibit? I'm trying to do a timeline for a for a course that I'm taking. So I downloaded some free software, which was a trial software. I don't seem to be able to do much with it except operate it with a screen that they sort of pre-provide. I'm wondering if you guys know anything about overriding of not overriding, but I mean actually using it the way they kind of offered it, as opposed to the restrictions that you seem to get once you get the software downloaded.
You could always buy the software.
Right.
I guess, yeah, that's probably...
or you could seek out an open-source alternative, which will not be inhibited in any way.
Mm-hmm.
An open-source alternative, yeah. So there, you would think that in almost any category there's an open-source?
I think so.
Yeah. Mm. Okay,
Wikipedia
well,
has a good software directory, so...
Yeah.
Where is that?
Wikipedia.org.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Good luck with that. You might also want to ask the personal computer people coming on after us. They might have some information on that as well. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh, no. This is dial tone again. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. We seem to every single line is following us. Now. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I wanted to give you guys a ringtone.
Give us a ringtone. I hope it's not obscene.
Sure. Well, no. It's a ringtone that would get you in trouble.
Well,
so,
not over the air, I hope.
No, not on the air. No. Basically, what I was going to say, if you recorded your voice saying, this phone is a bomb and it's going to blow up in 60 seconds,
ingenious.
That one was
very
good.
Yeah. Is there a way you could maybe force somebody to use that as a ring without their knowledge? I'm not suggesting. I'm just curious if that's actually possible, that you force a ringtone upon somebody and it becomes their default, and then you get them in trouble.
Sure.
And everybody has a good laugh.
That would be really bad.
You steal someone's phone. Yeah,
steal the phone and then put the ringtone on and then sneak it back. I mean, while they're in the bathroom in the Starbucks, then you can...
Again with the Starbucks.
Well, you know, you've left it their laptop. Now you've taken their phone and put a new ringtone on.
Oh, my God. You have a devious mind. Yeah, I guess that would work, wouldn't it? Okay. We're pretty much out of time, but we'd love to theorize on ways of getting in trouble and what other people are doing to get in trouble as well, because apparently everyone's doing it one way or another. Again, any other announcements for this week? We have the meetings coming up on Friday, and... everything else okay? Yeah? Okay, we have the new issue of 2600 will be out next month. We just finished working on it. And we have conferences coming up later on this summer. We have Hacking at Random, which now is taking credit cards from the United States. So people in the United States can actually pay to go to this thing. And if you go to har2009.org, I believe is the website, correct?
You have till the end of the month to get the early bird discount rate.
Which is quite a discount. So.
I hope that gets extended, because the issue of 2600 won't be out till after then. So we'll see if we can get that extended. But go ahead.
A quick plug.
Quick.
The EFF has a new project that will help people learn how to like encrypt their hard drives. And for like the normal end user, it's at ssd.eff.org.
Okay, cool. All right. Again, our email address, oth@2600.com. I look forward to hearing your various comments on our program. Again, thanks everybody for calling in the last month for helping us out and getting the station back in shape, hopefully. We'll see you again next week for another edition of Off the Hook. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. And here's another song about cell phones. Good night.
I used to be mellow. I took what life did. I'd kick on back and have some time to myself. But now the devil's claimed me all for his own. You see, I live my life on a cellular phone. Cellular phone, cellular phone. I can't live without my cellular phone. I know I'm important, it's really quite clear. I drive down the street with a phone in my ear. I drive like a wacko and I drive as I please. I can't hear all the people a honking at me. A cellular phone, cellular phone. I can't live without my cellular phone. I went to a funeral, 'twas my dear old dad. I don't understand why they got so mad. I mean, I answered the phone and the very first rang. It only takes one hand for the power of thing. A cellular phone, cellular phone. I can't live without my cellular phone. With me all night, and he's silent at all, just wouldn't seem right. This problem I got drives me right up the wall. I should stick out some help if there's somebody I could call. Cellular phone, cellular phone, I can't live without my cellular phone. Cellular phone, cellular phone, I can't live without my cellular phone.
Ah, cellular phones, cellular phones.